potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Smile, Blonde, Hocus Pocus 2, The Munsters, and Spirit Halloween. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the Trailer Park, and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring The House of the Lost on the Cape and Bite Size Halloween. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Star Trek IV, not The Voyage Home, which came out in the 80s, the new Star Trek run, the theatrical films that J.J. Abrams produced under Bad Robot. And I don't know if you're aware of sort of like the shuffling of the rights. At one point, the rights to Star Trek got split into two, and then they kind of finally brought them all back together under one banner. So that's why there's been this weird disconnect between Star Trek series and not an overall vision. But Star Trek IV, which is the Kelvin timeline, produced by J.J. Abrams and starring Chris Pine and Zachary Quinto and Zoe Saldana, that has been postponed. That has been taken off of the Paramount schedule. Now, Paramount had it set for next Christmas, basically like December 22nd, 2023. And it was kind of a chaotic thing anyways, because J.J. Abrams announced several months ago that they were going to do Star Trek IV with the cast that they had, and they hadn't secured the cast yet. So there's a lot of scrambling to try and make this release date. Well, now the release date has been pulled from the calendar, and Paramount is reevaluating when it's going to happen. So right now there's no Star Trek movie in the pipeline. But there are five shows on Paramount Plus. And if you look at what's happening also with Star Wars, both of those entities are discovering that it might be more lucrative to build your subscription base on your streaming service, and then you can charge $1 billion a month, than to make a movie every couple of years that hopefully will bring in $1 billion during the production. And that's working out really well for Star Wars, because since The Rise of Skywalker, there have been three series that have premiered on Disney Plus. Now, and that's not even including The Mandalorian, which actually premiered before The Rise of Skywalker hit theaters. So there's four series if you count that. And then there's like four more on the way. And right now, Disney, it's up in the air as to what they're exactly doing with the Star Wars theatrical films, because they've got a bunch of promise. Supposedly Taika Waititi's doing one or a couple, and supposedly Rian Johnson is still supposedly working on his trilogy. So there's a lot of stuff being talked about, but nothing really set in stone and nothing in production yet. Whereas Marvel's able to do both theatrical and the TV series, but Star Wars, I think they're trying to figure out what they can do to enrich the story so that then they can build into a bigger theatrical film and not just crank one out and then have one fail or just not make enough money like Solo did and get egg on their face. And I think they're going to have the same thing happen with Star Trek, because Star Trek, you got five series. You got Discovery, Picard, Strange New Worlds, and then two animated ones, Lower Decks and Prodigy. So, you know, this is all going to changing habits and getting a cash cow rather than a windfall. And when it comes to businesses, you may get more money in the short term from a windfall, but it's better to have a cash cow that you guarantee revenue from. Another little piece of development news is Ryan Reynolds went on Twitter and posted a video that teases the new Deadpool movie. So Deadpool 3 is going to happen, and it's going to have the return of Hugh Jackman as Wolverine. Now, this is, of course, outside of the Logan timeline, which itself is outside of the timeline of the original movies. If you really look at how Logan fits into the other movies, it doesn't. It's kind of a one-off on its own, because it talks about how the original stories of the X-Men were greatly exaggerated and put into comic book form. So Deadpool 3 is going to have Hugh Jackman as Wolverine. And even though those are both Fox properties that are now owned by Disney, the big discussion of, are they going to get an R-rated X-Men movie? Are they going to allow R-rated content? Deadpool's there. And that's okay, because I think movies and TV, when it comes to these franchises, especially if you talk about a massive franchise like Marvel itself, not even the X-Men, but Marvel, you can do a lot with that. And I love the fact that Disney is playing around with it. They got a sitcom now, basically, on, which is the She-Hulk. And Star Wars is playing around with it, too, because Andor is a little bit more of a grown-up series. I don't want to lose something fun and goofy and silly like the Book of Boba Fett, but it's a big enough universe. You can have different types of things. And they're learning that with Star Trek, the series as well. You can have something relatively serious like Picard that calls back to the old thing, and then you can have a new series like Discovery, which they finally threw them into the future to get rid of all the problems, and then have something goofy and silly like Lower Decks, which is animation. The last piece of news I want to talk about really quickly is the box office. You had Don't Worry, Darling come in number one with $19.4 million, which it was kind of on expectations. People are saying, oh, maybe it's going to make more, but it appeared to be somewhat front-loaded, and that's because of Harry Styles. Most of the draw to that movie was Harry Styles, so you had young women, and young women all tend to come out the first night or so to see that. In that first 24 hours, you get basically half of what your box office is going to be for the weekend. Now, The Woman King held really well, and it's down in second place with $11 million, and 13-year-old Avatar got a re-release, and it came in third with $10.5 million, which shows that there is a certain excitement and hype for the sequel that comes out at the end of the year. We'll just see how well it does. I know that that's going to be a big movie. I know that's going to do well. The big question is, how well is Avatar going to do? I don't think they have as much riding on it as the last one. This was not going to break a studio. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. This weekend starts October. One of the ones I want to hit really quickly is the Solar Opposites Halloween special, which is coming to Hulu on October 3rd.
I'll always hate this spooky month, especially Halloween. It's too haunting and spine-tingling.
Too late! We've already committed! We dug off a body from a graveyard and used dark sci-fi magic to bring it to life!
What is this? Some sort of Halloween trick?
I'm freaking out, man!
Your misery will be orchestrated by the Dark Lord himself.
Thanks for the update. Is there Wi-Fi here?
Some bloody once told me I ain't the sharpest ghoul in the den.
Wait, was that Smash Mouth?
The Solar Opposites, I think they fit enough in that Rick and Morty out there reality that they have, but it's not as annoying as a Rick and Morty thing. And I've always said with Rick and Morty, it's less the show's annoying, but the fans can sometimes be annoying. So you have a slightly lower intensity of fandom with Solar Opposites, which makes it a little bit easier to watch, and you're not just dealing with potheads on the internet. The other one I want to hit really quickly is Pray for the Devil, which comes into theaters on October 28th.
Natalie's parents believe that she is being possessed by some sort of evil entity.
She's not as scary as she looks.
She can hear you.
You're my favorite person here.
Us girls, we gotta stick together in this place.
When you enter the room of the possessed, you are walking onto a battlefield.
I can't hear you.
I've always found it funny that Hollywood tends to be very secular until Halloween time, and they bring out the exorcism movies, and everyone finds Jesus. You have to understand how this is spelled, P-R-E-Y, for the devil. So it's not get down on your knees and put your hands together. It's P-R-E-Y, which means to hunt and feed. And unfortunately, this is one of those horror trailers that looks like they give everything away. And that was one of the big problems with The Invitation, which I think hurt its box office, because they literally show you the final scenes of the movie, and no wonder that thing fizzled. Whereas something like a lot of the stuff with Barbarian, they didn't put in the marketing, and that's, I think, one of the biggest reasons that it's, well, aside from it being a good movie, but I think that's one of the reasons it's driving a word of mouth. Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about Hocus Pocus 2 and Spirit Halloween. And And welcome back to Feck Eyes at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews and talk about the new ones that are out. And these are both available at home. The first one is Hocus Pocus 2. The Sanderson sisters are once again resurrected in Salem, and a would-be coven of high school witches must fight back to save the town.
So what are you guys doing tonight?
Birthday ritual, scary movie marathon, same as every year.
You know, legend has it, it's on the 16th birthday that a witch gets her powers.
And another year begins anew.
Here to decapitate Malika Mystica.
Lock up your children! Yes, Salem, we're back!
Hey, it's the Sanderson sisters.
I bet you're looking for the stage.
Always.
What's interesting is I just sort of let Hocus Pocus kind of disappear from my interest. And it wasn't until, I'd say about 15 years ago, that I just found out from a lot of people who I just ended up having casual conversations with about Halloween movies, there's a huge fan base for it. The more and more people I talked to and the more I looked into it, I realized the fan base is very similar to the fan base for Goonies, only it's the opposite side of the gender chart. You've got Goonies as a movie that played ad nauseum on HBO in the early 90s. And so there's a lot of basically millennials who watched it like, and that's a perfect age. You got to be 10 to 12 to really, really love the Goonies. And so you have this entire generation of people that think Goonies is the greatest movie ever. It's not. It's got problems, but it's still fun. And I've learned that Hocus Pocus basically did the same thing, only instead of it being the Goonies on HBO, it was Hocus Pocus on the Disney Channel because they played it every Halloween. If you're a female millennial, you most likely love Hocus Pocus, maybe even Gen Zers, but really it's much more of a millennial thing. Massive fan base. It's been kept alive because of its fan base. And it's a cute little movie. I've talked about it before. But Hocus Pocus 2, I remember when they announced it, people just lost their mind. They're like, oh my God, Hocus Pocus is getting the sequel. Isn't it great? And one of the things that does irritate me about Hocus Pocus is it's the same story as Ernest Scared Stupid. Only instead of witches, it's trolls in Ernest Scared Stupid. It's a shame because, you know, Jim Varney's not with us anymore. He was a national treasure. And Ernest Scared Stupid certainly deserves more love. So go and check out Ernest Scared Stupid while you're waiting to watch Hocus Pocus 2 on Disney Plus. But the sequel, it's very much cut from the same cloth. In fact, I thought it was going to be directed by Kenny Ortega, who directed the original. It's not. It's directed by Ann Fletcher, who did movies like Dumplin'. And I think she did The Proposal. So, I mean, she's a female director who's been knocking around for a while. But it's clear she's a big Hocus Pocus fan, too. Because they play to the hits in this movie. Is this movie a great film? No, it's not. But it is exactly what you got with the first movie. It's got the over-the-top acting. I mean, it's pretty much set up to do a drag show. Because the Sanderson sisters, I mean, they look exactly the same because of all the makeup and costuming, even though everybody's almost 30 years older. I mean, to put it in perspective, Sarah Jessica Parker now is older than Bette Midler was when she made the first film. But it's got everything you'd expect. It's got goofy jokes at times, and they've got a big song and dance number. You got the return of Billy Butcherson, who's played by Doug Jones, who was in Star Trek. He's great, and he actually gets to talk because his mouth isn't sewn shut in this one. He's a lot of fun, and it's all the little characters, how they all fit together. And they bring in some new characters because, of course, the kids aren't kids anymore. They're adults. One of the problems, and we'll talk, this is going to be a theme in this show, is people remember what it was like to see a movie when they were a kid. And then they make a sequel or an extension of it, and they watch it, and it doesn't give them the same feels because they're an adult. I mean, I remember when I was a kid, I was a huge Star Wars fan. Nothing was greater than going to see Star Wars. I looked forward to that for days, if not weeks. And now I've got other things on my plate, and yeah, I like a good Star Wars movie, but, you know, my expectations are tempered. Plus, I'm an adult, and I have different tastes. You know, everyone's seen Inside Out. We know how emotions work. And that's what it is with Hocus Pocus. If you go back and watch the original Hocus Pocus, it's about as goofy and as cheesy, but also as charming as this one is. So I think it's a very worthy sequel. You know, it's fun, and it's a silly romp, and it should play very well with the fans of the original film. I'm going to say Hocus Pocus 2 kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next one I want to talk about, Spirit Halloween. A group of friends sneak into a pop-up Halloween store for the holiday, only to face off against an evil spirit.
We can always just watch a scary movie at my place.
Dude, we need something super creepy or I'm out.
You want something really creepy? How about a night locked in here?
Pop-up Halloween store in a creepy lot? Awesome.
Booyah!
We're doing something Saturday. Three of us, best holiday of the year, just like always.
But the store closed and we're still inside.
You mean the store's locked and we're trapped inside?
Oh my God, what's happening?
For 1 hour on the anniversary of their death, they can possess things
or people.
This one kind of blew my mind that it existed because I don't know if I've ever seen a movie. I'm sure I have, but it's escaping me. Ever seeing a real release that is essentially based on a business. I mean, I'm not even talking like Mac and Me being heavily subsidized by McDonald's and having a big song and dance number with Ronald McDonald in it. I'm talking Spirit Halloween. It's about the store. And I was just curious to see what it, because it looks like they're trying to do an authentic movie. They're not just doing a 90-minute advertisement. And here's the thing. There's some names in the movie. You got Rachel Lee Cook plays one of the moms. You've got Christopher Lloyd playing the evil spirit who's wanting to possess the kids in the store. Marla Gibbs has shown up in this movie. So there are some names. I mean, they're not necessarily somebody who's going to, you know, make a huge box office draw. But this is not just thrown together in the parking lot of a Spirit of Halloween in New Jersey. I mean, they actually made a real movie. And in that sense, it's cheesy. Let me just say, it's cheesy, and the stuff that goes on inside the store looks really cool because it has all the really neat Halloween decorations. Weirdly enough, outside of the store, the decorations look kind of dorky. So they do have these moments where they neglect parts of the movie. But it's your basic story. Weirdly similar to Hocus Pocus 2, where it's these kids and then this entity is trying to capture them and take over their bodies. It feels like a Goosebumps episode. You know, it feels like something R.L. Stine would have written in the 90s. And at the level of acting, too. The acting's not great in it. And it's over the top, and the dialogue's a little clunky. But, I mean, considering, I guess what I was approaching this as is, how bad could it be? What kind of a train wreck could this have been if it were just put together slapdash? And it really isn't. They take some time with it. I mean, it's super low budget. I mean, it's not nearly as cool as something like Scary Stories You Tell in the Dark, which really works as a great Halloween movie. But you know what? Considering it's a viral marketing version of a pop-up Halloween store, I was surprised at how fun it was. I mean, like you said, it's stupid, but it's made for kids. And I kind of defer a little bit to that. I say it's made for kids. That's okay. And I was impressed that it was actually coherent. I mean, I had the bar set pretty low. But, you know, I mean, it has some really clunky writing. But it's better than it should be. And it plays like an old episode of Goosebumps. So, Spirit Halloween kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
Next up on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about the big horror film of the weekend, Smile and Blonde. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the big horror movie of the weekend, and that is Smile. It's interesting. There's been really a good year for horror movies. Going back to even just a couple weeks ago, Barbarian was really good. I mean, Invitation, I didn't see it, but it wasn't impressive by the numbers. But you had stuff like The Black Phone. That was one earlier this year, this summer, like sometime in June. That was a fantastic movie. And, you know, they've done some interesting stuff with horror film. Plus, you had X and you had Pearl. I mean, there's a bunch of stuff. This is going to be a banner year for horror movies. Just note that. 2022 is going to be known. And I think part of that is because you can do these smaller, intimate, low-cast, low-budget horror movies, and they were sort of COVID-proof. So you have plenty to keep in the theaters. Whereas the big, huge productions have scaled back or postponed. Now, in Smile, this creepy tale follows a woman who has been infected by a spirit that makes her see apparitions with permanent, terrifying smiles.
Hi. I know you're nervous. I just want to have a chat.
I'm seeing something no one else can see except for me. It's smiling at me.
Yesterday, a patient in your care died brutally in front of you.
I need to find an explanation for what happened.
I found 20 cases involving 19 victims with a direct line linking them all together.
As I understand it, this was one of those that Paramount was deciding whether or not to release in theaters. The idea was to put it on Paramount Plus, which is what they did with Orphan First Kill, which is another really good horror movie that came out this year. And I think it was good that Orphan First Kill ended up on Paramount Plus because it drew attention to the service. I think if Orphan First Kill would have gone into theaters, it would have done okay business. And it was in theaters, but it was mostly on Paramount Plus. But it would have done okay business and then fizzled really quickly. But Smile certainly deserves to be in the big screen. It works. It works well with a crowd. I actually saw it, and it's creepy because it's the things happen in there, and you're just like, yeah. And you get these reactions from the audience. What's interesting about this movie is its subtext. One of the things that you have to understand about horror is horror, it's not always about the elements you see. There's almost always subtext. Even something like Dracula. Dracula is a great example. The original Dracula, the book, it's not just about vampirism. It's an allegory for syphilis. And these things pervade horror films in particular, you know, like, or even horror concepts. The original Frankenstein is more religious contemplation than anything. I mean, yeah, it has the horror moments, but it's, you know, what man can do. I mean, it's called the modern Prometheus. It's about the guy who steals fire from the gods. And Smile is about trauma. Now, a lot of horror movies are about trauma. That's nothing new. But sort of the subtext that you get with Smile is the idea of grinning and bearing it when you've been traumatized. And there's moments that are even frustrating in this film where the main character does not open up about what's going on with her. And she doesn't tell people the truth, and that ends up hurting her. But that's real, because how many times have you dealt with somebody like, it's fine, I'm fine, I'm fine. And you're like, you know you're not fine. Like, my wife will do that, and she'll come in, and finally I pull her aside. I'm like, no, what is going on? You're having a problem. And she doesn't like to confront it, but you have to confront your problems. I mean, it doesn't even have to be traumatic. But I mean, if you have a trauma in your life, and people in this movie, they're all traumatized, that they've brought with them, and you hide it and you bury it, it doesn't disappear. You have to let it out and face it and recover from it. And that's what this is all about. So a good horror movie has subtext. And I mean, subtext isn't very sub. It's pretty obvious what they're doing with this movie. But it does have a lot to say about that. And once you understand that, there's a stretch in the middle that just kind of takes a while. Sort of like what I complained about with Don't Worry, Darling, where at a certain point you're like, oh, okay, I get it. Something weird's happening. Get to the point. So it does drag a bit in the middle. It has some second act problems for Smile, but it's effective and it's creepy. I think it's a unique way of doing it. And I really did enjoy it. I mean, while it faces some pacing problems, the unsettling imagery and unsubtle but worthy subtext make for a good scare. So I'm going to have to say that Smile rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Blonde. This is available on Netflix. Ana de Maris plays Marilyn Monroe in the fictional biopic. I say fictional biopic for very specific reasons, showing the abuse and trauma of her life.
Here. Please come. Don't abandon me.
She's coming.
It's said that those lances go back to their spouses. Diamonds are a girl's best friend.
She's coming. She's almost here.
This isn't a horror movie, but it plays in a way kind of like one because of how much Marilyn Monroe had such a rough life and was traumatized and abused. And I'm not to take anything away from the real tragedies that happened to Marilyn Monroe. But can we put a moratorium on Marilyn Monroe movies and Elvis movies, please? What else is there to say about Elvis Presley or Marilyn Monroe that hasn't already been said a dozen times? And I'm tired of taking any young actress who's just pretty, putting her in a bleach blonde wig and putting a lot of makeup on her and have her go, "Oh, hi, I'm here to act," and then suddenly gush over her. That's totally what happened with Michelle Williams in My Evening with Marilyn, or My Day with Marilyn, or whatever that was. I thought she was awful in that movie, and people were like, "Oh, give her the Oscar." Now, Ana de Maris does a really good job in this movie, with that said. I mean, her accent isn't right, but she's Cuban, and she just recently, you know, within the last 10 years, is trying to master English so she can have an acting career. But anybody can talk like an airhead. I think it's what goes on with her eyes and her act. I mean, she really throws into this. And I give Ana de Maris kudos because she carries the movie on her shoulders. But there's some real problems with it because, first of all, if you don't know anything about it, it's based on a Joyce Carol Oates book that was seen as a fictional biography. It's not a biography. It's not anything that definitively happened. And there's a lot of stuff where they get into her mind and there's no way you could know. And some of the chronology, it's, and even Joyce Carol Oates has come out and said that the story is not meant to be the story of Marilyn Monroe. It's sort of like the way Baz Luhrmann's Elvis movie was more about Elvis as the legend than it was about Elvis as the man. It's directed by Andrew Dominik, who did stuff like Killing Them Softly and The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford, blah, 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 blah. I do not like his movies. I find him pretentious and boring. My God, do something under 100 minutes. Blonde is daggone near 3 hours. It does not need to be there. And it's also what's interesting. It's getting a lot of news because it's rated NC-17. And it's not that it's the first time that Netflix has put NC-17 material on their service. They have. I think this is the first time they've made their own movie that got an NC-17 rating. And really, I mean, I'm not going to go through and explain the gory details of why it gets an NC-17 rating. I think it's stupid and it involves sex. But it's certainly not pornography, I'll tell you that. Although you do get to see a lot of nude scenes with Ana de Maris, and that's nothing new. She's been nude in a lot of movies, and I support that. But the thing is, it's just so boring. And what I know of Marilyn Monroe, it's like you feel like you're retreading it, and then it just gets abusive at times where things are happening to her, and you're just like, why do we have to be taken through? First of all, we all know this stuff went on. And so this is not like revolutionary. And why do I have to watch this? It's so boring and so pretentious. And there's so many slow motion scenes. And it just takes forever to get. I mean, seriously, I felt like I spent more time watching this movie than I've watched Marilyn Monroe in any other real movie. So it's pretentious and boring. But what do you expect from Andrew Dominik? That's sort of his brand. Anyways, this is bloated and disjointed. It tries to be a biopic, but it really turns into more of an uncomfortable exploitation flick that masquerades as a drama. I'm going to have to say that Blonde sucks.
It sucks.
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, we're going to review another Halloween title of The Munsters and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring The House of the Lost on the Cape and Bite-Sized Halloween on Hulu. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about The Munsters. Rob Zombie helms this wacky recreation about a monster family from the 1960s sitcom.
I want a man that makes my blood run cold. A man that every time he enters my crypt, it's like a stake through my dead black heart.
I can whip the upper humpy down in the lab.
No. Remember what happened last time?
He was battered.
Looking for a vision.
A queen. True love.
And what exactly do you want?
Is Herman Munster in there?
This is available on Netflix. It's also going direct to Blu-ray and VOD. And look, you will not find a bigger critic of Rob Zombie out there. I have some real issues with his films. For the record, I respect the heck out of the guy for his passion of horror. This guy is into horror, and he's into the atmosphere of it. And he's done some interesting movies. Not a big fan of House of a Thousand Corpses, but I gotta say, I think The Devil's Rejects is probably one of his best films, especially for how much he's trying to evoke Sam Peckinpah in it. But it does suffer from what all of his films do with just sort of this nastiness to it. You also will not find a greater critic of Sherry Moon Zombie out there than me. I mean, if he made Hamlet, she would play Hamlet and all the other characters. Please don't let him make Hamlet. Anyways, he got the job to do the Munsters, and I was terrified because I hated what he did to the Halloween franchise. And I'm like, great, the Munsters is going to be a bunch of white trash people. And Sherry Moon Zombie, of course, well, yeah, she ends up playing Lily. So I was really nervous because his stuff is so nihilistic and grim and dark. And I'm like, the Munsters is fun. And the thing with the Munsters is it was in that age of sitcoms, you know, the Brady Bunch and My Three Sons and stuff like that, where it was a good, wholesome American family. And that's what the Munsters were. They just happened to be monsters. So I said, I'll wait till it came out. And then late at night, it's like 3 a.m. It drops on Netflix. And I say, I might as well give it a watch. And you know what? I found myself enjoying it. I realized what he was doing, and he actually understood how to make this movie. He didn't understand how to make Halloween, but he understood how to make the Munsters, because a lot of the complaints I'm hearing about it is like, it's stupid and it's dumb and it has these corny jokes. And I'm like, have you seen the original sitcom? The original Munsters, that was part of the charm. It was a dorky American 1960s sitcom. And they don't do, which I was afraid, is they didn't have the people do impressions of the original characters. Like, Jeff Daniel Phillips plays Herman Munster. He does not go in there and do a Fred Gwynne impression. He kind of makes it his own, but he keeps the over-the-top kind of goofiness, blup, blup, blup kind of character that Herman Munster always was. And Daniel Roebuck, who plays Grandpa, does a great job making his own goofy version of Grandpa we remember from the show. And Sherry Moon Zombie, she's the weak link in the whole thing. And I mean, she tries, but again, it's not like she's trying to just redo Yvonne DiCarlo. She's doing her own thing, which doesn't quite work, but I can forgive that. And it's bright and it's vibrantly colored. And I know that's another thing people complain about. Well, apparently, I don't think he was allowed to make it in black and white. And so he threw in all this almost neon color, which fits with the 60s. If you watch any, like, if you watch Star Trek, you watch the original Star Trek, that thing has just insane color to it because color was new to TV. So they just dumped it on as much as they could. I thought the Munsters was funny. Yeah, it has stupid jokes. Yeah, it has goes for low-hanging fruit. It does run a little long. But he made this with love for the product and actually made something that works for the product. So Rob Zombie did a good job. You know, God help me, I didn't think I was going to say this in this review, but the Munsters rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
Listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. The first one is Bite Size Halloween, and that is on Hulu. They've done this for the last couple of years where they put together some short films, and they're from up-and-coming younger directors. So in Bite Size Halloween, Hulu collects 20 new short horror films from visionary directors in time for Huluween.
Hello.
Are you alone in there?
Yeah, it's just me.
My husband can't seem to fix anything.
Look at you, my baby boy.
Mama, look out!
You cannot move forward until you acknowledge what is behind you.
It's really hard to review all of these, but I have to say, for as disparate as the source material and the directors are in this, you get some really good short films. I went through and watched all 20 of them. And there's maybe one or two that I thought were not great, but most of them are at least entertaining and interesting, and there's some real bangers in there too. There's some really good, solid movies. Now, one of the things, just to warn you, because I know some people are triggered by diversity, but they go for a very diverse group of people making the films. There's racially diverse directors. There's they reach a lot into the LGBT community. And for those who don't know, the LGBT community loves horror. There's a real component of horror fans in the LGBT community. So if you're ever going to do anything horror, reach out to that group. It's like black people love horror movies too. Not all of them, but there's a really powerfully strong fan base of horror films in the black community. So you do want to reach out to them. And a lot of them have layered in some messaging and some points to say. And that's okay, because horror as a genre deals with real issues. They're just put in there in subtext. Some of them are pretty out there, and there's some really grisly stuff and some uncomfortable things. And there's also just some, for example, there's this one that about this one character from the Pacific Islands who deals with a legend of their culture. It's not meant to say one thing or the other. It's just sort of this look at it. There's also this one that looks at the impact of colonialism on places like India and Pakistan and Bangladesh and places like that. So you do have that messaging in there, but horror is a very effective delivery system for that kind of stuff. And I gotta say, there's some really great stuff. My absolute favorite one is one called Snatched, which is a twist of the sort of Invasion of the Body Snatchers type thing, only it's framed with a kid coming out to his parents that he's gay. And it is hilarious because it's not at all what you expect it to be. That one's my favorite. But boy, these are some really good short films. If you like horror movies, it's definitely worth checking out on Hulu. I'm going to say Hulu's Bite-Sized Halloween totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's do the final film in the Home Cinema Roundup. This is the one that's not really a horror film at all, although it has fantastic elements to it. The House of the Lost on the Cape is available from Shout Factory. It's a piece of animation from Japan. In the film, two lost children find refuge in a relocation system after an earthquake and connect with the magical natural world.
Here we are. Welcome to our new home, girls. This is a Myoiga, a house that's hospitable to the ones who enter it.
I was just going with the flow before. Can we trust this old lady?
Never you mind, all right?
Will you be okay on your own?
Well, make sure you eat up.
Really good.
Evil that appears in the human world can only be purified by humans.
This is a great example of the maturity that the Japanese bring to animation. Even today in America, all animation has to have some sort of angle for kids. And while this movie is about kids, animation is just an option, as it would do shoot on 35 or digital. And that's just an option to do these really complex stories. And the story is about these two girls. Well, they use the relocation system of an earthquake to find a new home. And it's actually based on and inspired by a real earthquake that had happened in Japan. And, you know, it's an island nation on a fault line. So you're going to get natural disasters. And, you know, it's about a girl coming of age and learning about herself and overcoming the trauma from her home by living in this very welcoming house. It's a house that it's basically like this good karma house that it takes care of you if you take care of it. And she befriends these woodland creatures. So it has shades of, you know, stuff like if you've ever seen My Neighbor Totoro, it feels a little bit like that, only it's not as leaning into the fantasy as Totoro is, but it's also talking about the unpleasant forces that are at work. It's a really sweet movie. It's worth checking out if you like Japanese animation of telling a more pragmatic story, even though it does have fantastic elements to it. And on the Blu-ray, it has some of the recipes that they make, and I actually might try some. I'm not going to do the one with bamboo. I'm not a fan of bamboo. But there's a couple good recipes in there that I want to give a shot at. So, I mean, this is sweet and touching. And it's a piece of Japanese animation that takes real emotions and weaves them into a fantastical story. I'm going to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
And that's it for the reviews. Next week, I'm going to be talking about Amsterdam, Hellraiser, and Terrifier 2. And until then, have a fat and scary time at the movies or at home.